Welcome to Eyes and Lows, the podcast where we shine a light on mental health in the blind, low vision, and print impaired community, bringing in experts, real stories, valuable insight, meaningful conversation, and everything in between. Join us as we explore more deeply and freely the eyes and lows of a wide range of abilities, navigating life after diagnosis, and building resilience. We have with us today the founder and chief vision empowerment officer of Adjusting to Vision Loss, LLC, Janice Barocas. Janice offers individual mental health counseling for adults in Atlanta by helping them therapeutically process challenges related to vision loss. Welcome, Janice. We're so thrilled to have you here with us today. Why don't you tell everyone a little bit more about yourself and what you do and why you do it?
Sure. Thank you for taking on this issue. Let me just start with that. I have been working with folks with vision loss specifically. This is my second career since basically 7 years, since 2017 when I went back to grad school to get a clinical rehabilitation counseling degree. And that was the start of this chapter. Okay. But I'd had a background in disabilities of a lot of kinds for quite some time. But this was hands down, I asked when I got into grad school, if I was going to focus on a population, what's the most underserved disability group in Georgia? And every single person I spoke to said the same thing. Wow. People with vision loss. And I was like, well, let me see where I can go be useful. So,
wow. So was there a specific person or place encounter that you've had that at least since you started this journey that reassured you that this was where you're supposed to be?
Every door. Yeah. It consistently has been my experience because, number one, of the expertise of my clients. Like, I just learned a lot from my clients and hearing their stories. I was like, wow, you did deserve a callback. Like, yeah. Wow, I can't believe that happened. I'm so sorry. And that was kind of the beginning of starting to ask better questions myself about what are the services? How are they supposed to work? Test driving things before I would refer a client to access a service. I'd be like, let me call and see how this would be for somebody with visual impairment. And I just did a Medicaid application for somebody, and I was like, this is impossible.
Yeah.
You physically would have no way in the world of accessing this gateway website if you were trying to, right? If you didn't, you know, if you were new to vision loss, if you already had some, you know, JAWS training, yeah, that might be accessible, I hope. But for the vast majority of my clients, that's not where they are yet.
Right.
And so, right, you need a lot of safety net services to work for you before you can get to the point where you're actually employable. And I just could not even believe how astoundingly inaccessible most of the things that they were being told to go access for help were for them. And I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. So what did you see, I guess, the differences in the mental health of those with vision loss versus maybe other disabilities or those who maybe didn't have disabilities?
Frustration was the number one thing that I was being told, frustration and just discontent with services as they were. When I was working at the Georgia Vocational Rehabilitation Agency as a VR counselor, people felt like the clients, you know, were very empowered, right? They had voices, and maybe that wasn't, not everybody's clients were showing up that way. And that not everybody knew how to deal with that. And I was like, well, you'd be frustrated too.
Yeah.
I mean, this makes perfect sense. And I think being able to just validate that back to my clients, like, I would be frustrated. You have every reason to be frustrated. And that was kind of how the recognizing the emotional barriers to employment were a lot bigger than anybody was naming or recognizing. There was a lot of hard training and skills going on that was available. It was also, if you were super anxious or depressed, probably not going to be very effective.
Yeah.
And I started seeing evidence of that real early on in my work as a vocational rehab counselor. And so that was when I was like, you know, people don't feel heard. They don't feel seen. And we're asking them to take really big risks. Yeah, like, of course that's not going well.
Yeah.
Of course it's not. So when I left and started looking at, you know, what I could do in private practice, I was like, this is the population. There's no question. This is the population to serve. And who else is doing it? And looking around, there weren't a whole lot of people.
Right.
At all.
So when it came to diagnosis, right, when they are first diagnosed, what symptoms do you notice maybe are the same among this group of individuals?
So to clarify, you mean diagnosed with their ocular condition?
Yes.
Vision loss. Right. Very rarely do I meet anybody that early on in the journey.
Oh, okay.
Right? There's some textbook written by Dr. Dean Tuttle that lays out the pretty boilerplate stages of adjusting to vision loss that everybody goes through. They start with shock. They start with trauma, right? Social trauma and physical trauma. Waking up blind or starting to have this dawning realization something's changing with my eyes and I can't believe my eyes sometimes, right? And the fear that goes with that. And a lot of masking as well. And so very often, shock, trauma, denial, withdrawal are kind of those first early stages. People are not out looking for a therapist. They're not actually entertaining the idea of going back to work.
Yeah.
At all. They're like, why? You know, they're not confident in what they can do. And they're scared. And they're anxious. And they're depressed. So typically, depression is the stage.
Yeah.
Where I'm meeting people. There may have been a lot of things that preceded that. I can only speak to when, you know, we first, how they present with, you know, my interaction with them.
So how are your clients typically referred to you?
You name it. Now I accept Medicare since January 1 of 2024. So that's a door. Vocational rehabilitation is still where a lot of clients come from. But I would say most folks don't get the help they need. They never find.
Yeah.
Or they may not even be, they may think, hey, I could benefit from some counseling, but have no idea where to access it. And it may or may not be affordable. So that's, you know, there's several problems there with access.
Yeah. How do you believe this work has changed you?
I wouldn't do anything else now. How has it changed me? I'm in a place where I can do some good, you know? That's always been the goal, professionally speaking. And when I made the decision to change careers, it was because I felt like I had kind of maxed out with what I could do with that. So this is good work if you can get it, working with good people.
Yeah. I know that, you know, for me, I've worked with individuals with disabilities for quite a number of years. But when it came to blindness, unknowingly, I had maybe some bias. You know, you have this thought that people with vision loss are over the age of 65,
nope.
You know. And now, obviously, being in this work, you realize that this comes with, you know, diabetes, you know, strokes, mm-hmm. You know, a number of ailments and illnesses that can bring forth blindness. How would you say maybe your eyes have been open in that arena?
I didn't operate with those kinds of preconceived notions.
Okay.
So I just take it as it comes. I guess it would be helpful to give you some of my background in disability to know why that is what it is. Because I think you're describing the experience of most people.
Yeah.
I tend to ask clients real early on when your vision started to change, you know, had you ever met anybody else who was blind or visually impaired, 99% of them say no. So that's a pretty good baseline, right? But I was born with a congenital birth defect. I was born with a club left foot. And that was, quote unquote, fixed. I'm saying that in air quotes. And I started to have chronic pain in my 20s and 30s I had no idea that other people didn't live with that sort of pain on the opposite, the compensating hip on the right side. And come to find out, this was a procedure they no longer do on children. They don't. Fortunately, I was in grad school at the time, and I had access to a lot of research databases, and I started researching my own diagnosis, my own condition. And I was like, oh my God, this is a thing. And having felt betrayed by the medical system, like, why didn't anybody tell me this? I think that, you know, that has been a lot of the frame that I come from. Like, I expect and I identify with the sort of, we're not getting the whole story.
Yeah.
But also, I've probably spent 30 years working with, in direct roles in many ways, with people with other disabilities. Summer before I started law school, I answered an ad to work for a quadriplegic single mom and doing light housekeeping and, you know, helping her with her correspondence and cooking. And she had a teenage son. And, you know, hands-on stuff. And over the years of, I went through the vocational rehab system with her as her, right, sort of next friend. And we got a lot of, got some great services, got her employed. I went through the process of helping her get a Medicaid waiver. Like I did every part of the system navigation on the consumer side.
Yeah.
And learned a lot, right? Learned a lot about what works and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Learned a lot about the stuff that's just maddeningly frustrating about having to re-verify that you're still quadriplegic once a year for Medicaid. Like, nope, no miracles happen. You know, every year the paperwork would come.
Right.
We would joke and I would help her fill it out. Like, yeah, do they have any idea how just, insulting it is
Absolutely.
To get this form again and to have to fill it out? Like, we would have called you if the quadriplegia had miraculously, right, vanished. We would have been phoning you first.
Right.
Right. To these state agencies that we don't want to deal with anyway. And so every bit of that, I understand that you want to be treated as a whole person by these systems.
Yeah.
Very, very, like, at my core. And so to get to meet people who, however they lost their vision, my first question is, like, I assume they're the expert on their disability. Tell me about your vision loss, Mm-hmm. Tell me about how that happened, what that was like, and making it a safe space to talk about it.
Yeah.
When a lot of people have maybe hidden it or been ashamed of it, I think that right away creates trust and rapport and just changes the game entirely.
Yeah.
And I ended up finding out a lot of professionals, particularly in the employment space, weren't asking those kinds of direct questions. They were, I'm not sure why they weren't, right, in some cases, but maybe it was considered impolite or disrespectful or rude. Like, I'm guessing here because I didn't, that was not my experience,
right.
But I came away thinking, why would you not come right to the expert and say, tell me about what's going on with you? And maybe they're in denial and not able to talk about it. And that'll show up, you know. If you're reading medical records too, you're going to be able to, maybe help somebody understand, wrap their brain around their diagnosis. They may have never had anybody explain it to them fully. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Depending on what your access to medical care. And if you're in shock and denial and you're sitting in a doctor's office, right, the minute they start to tell you something that's traumatic, what you hear is like the Peanuts parents, wah, wah, wah,
right,
wah, wah,
right.
Like, so people come out of that appointment, I don't know that they were fully informed. I don't know what they understood. And frankly, they may not know what they missed. And so a lot of this is like, helping people understand you're not supposed to know. Like, if you don't know, what else can we do? What are your choices?
Yeah.
Take somebody else with you to the doctor's appointment next time you go, maybe. Be an extra set of ears. Make a list of questions before you go so you don't have to try to remember that in your anxious moment of like, people go in so scared sometimes to doctor's appointments about what are they going to tell me? How's it going to affect my life? Can I afford it?
Right.
Right. There's just a lot of things you're scared of that the people in the white coats might say.
Right.
And so this idea that, just supporting people to not making them wrong for whatever they do or don't know about their own diagnosis. And if they want to know more, at the point when they want to know more, like what are your choices? How can we get, some more information about that? And I come from a medical model background, just like informally. I was raised by a doctor and a nurse. I'm not scared of, we might not do what the people in the white coats tell us all the time.
Yeah.
We might not trust them. We might not even believe them. And that's, that's okay. Like, it's okay to go in and disagree with your doctor.
Yeah.
If you want to say, I'm not sure, I'm okay with that surgery. The last surgery didn't go so well. Like, you get to say that.
Yeah.
You're allowed. Give yourself permission to say the thing that you're scared of saying, because guess what? If you don't ask, how are we going to know? You get to do that. And people, I think that empowerment point of view, very often, people are like, really?
Yeah.
I could do that? And I'm like, absolutely. And we can role play it in counseling. I will help you script that, right? We can memorize it. We could get it, make you a recording on your phone. You can listen to it back. However you want to do this, right?
Yeah.
You have tools and you have choices. And I think that right there is like sometimes what people need to hear. That can be a game changer by itself.
Absolutely. And I think that, there are certain groups of individuals that didn't have great experiences with doctors. And so hey, I told my doctor I was in this pain. They didn't believe me.
Right.
You know, and so that empowerment piece, I think, is truly very important because it gives that confidence, you know, that they need to say, you know, I'm a person as well, you know, just because I have a limitation, you know, here or a diagnosis doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not made to be heard as well.
And you can change doctors. I mean, sometimes that's the conversation.
Right.
I'm like, you know, it doesn't mean you're stuck with, right? This is not the only eye care professional.
Right. And when you think about it, even as well as, you know, insurance, you know, hey, well, my insurance doesn't cover this, or I'd have to pay out of pocket for this. And a lot of times, you know, they might just be alone. They don't have, you know, financial assistance. You know, that might be a thing as well. So, I mean, not only with the empowerment, but it sounds like you're also providing resources and, you know, advocacy as well. So that's really great.
And some practical support. I mean, sometimes if what comes to light is somebody has no sighted assistance at home, very often that's something they either haven't been asked or may not have disclosed.
Okay.
For whatever reason. Sometimes there are, right, family members, friends, you know, people who could be that sighted assistance at home, but the particular paperwork task, right, that needs done, there's some privacy concerns around it. Or I'm not ready to disclose yet to certain family members that this is, right, progressive and will, you know, result in blindness.
Yeah.
A, because I'm hoping it won't. And B, because I'm not ready to have that difficult conversation yet with my spouse or my adult children.
Right.
And so how, right, sometimes people just having a unconditionally supportive neutral party to help you think that through.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just making fear-based decisions about, well, I feel like I can't, you know, I can't tell them that. I'm like, okay, so, you know, what would you do if you weren't afraid?
Right.
Like, what's the barrier? And come to find out, you know, I don't know how I would have that conversation. I'm not going to be able to take, right, their disappointment or whatever it is, fear. And so it's building the coping skills, right? Building the emotional toolkit, as I like to say, to be able to expand the choices, you know, to be able to say, you know, what would it be like? How would you want it to go if you were going to talk with your wife about that? Like, what are the words you would want most to hear from her, you know, and to do that in counseling? And sometimes people recognize, you know, if that conversation does go badly, God forbid, worst case scenario, like, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's, you know, we'll all be scared together, you know, but I think fear shuts people down. And anxiety shuts people down. And I think that your world's already, you're feeling very isolated. Your world's already small with vision loss.
Right.
Shrinking. Right. And that's one of the, I think, ways you can empower people to recognize, you know, these people around you care about you. They love you. If they knew, like, how do we know? 50-50 chance they might want help. They might be super supportive. They might back away. They might not know how to handle it. But I don't know that. I don't have a crystal ball here, and let's just entertain the possibility that they might respond, you know, appropriately.
Yeah,
you know, and we teach people how to treat us is like the next sentence I usually say in that. I'm like, look, if you show up, people are often in that exact client conversation. It often is, well, I don't want them to pity me, and I'm like, so you teach people how to treat you. Like,
yeah,
if you don't pity you, I don't know why they would.
Yeah.
So if you show up saying, I need your help with these three things, can you read me this form top to bottom, right? You know, and can you do this piece of research for me on Google?
Yeah.
And tell me what the results are. Like, now you are the captain of your own ship. And I don't think anybody pities that. That's information gathering. You know, you have a need for information to make this decision. Yeah, you do. And there's ways to get people to help you with that that don't make you less than.
I love that. Yeah. And I know that a huge part of that, you know, with the diagnosis is trust. It's now who can I trust? And especially when you lose your vision, you have to sort of rely on other people. You have to rely on other people until you're able to build a certain level of independence. But still then, you still need to trust those people who are around you.
That's a big issue.
Yeah. Do you ever mediate conversations with family members?
Nope. Don't outside my scope. I do not do that. I will coach you up on what would you like to say? How would you like to show up? Can we get you ready for that?
Right.
There's no rush, right? We can wait. These conversations are not, you know, immediate needs. And you'll know when it's right. Like, well, what if she does need to know? I'm like, you'll know.
Yeah.
Like, this is me conveying that I trust the client. Like, trust your still small voice, right? You'll know when it's time to say that. And you'll know. And that's also how I think some of these trust decisions get made.
Yeah.
Like, how, you know, what does your gut tell you about this person?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, well, they've done this, that, and the other, and I don't want them looking at my bank information. I'm like, okay, that's your answer.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Who else can help you with this? Until we get, you know, the JAWS skills to get you online doing your own banking. And in the meantime, if the banking needs done, right? Who mm-hmm. can help me with that? And people come to their vision loss with trauma. Right. And so when you bring up trust, right, if whatever, you know, whatever happened in your life before this news, that's part of what counseling needs to address very often. Why can't people trust? And those are real reasons. Like, people came by their trauma, honestly. And then there's more trauma that happens with the vision loss. If you have felt bullied or taken advantage of, or yeah, you name it, not seen.
Right.
Ignored. Had a medical professional, you know, discount your self-report of what was going on, and you were right, and you knew you were right. And then a couple years went by, and they told you, you know, right? And you were right.
Yeah.
And now you're like, can I fire this doctor? And the answer is, that maybe that's a good question. Who else will your plan cover? Like, can we research that online? You know, people don't want to make their treating medical professionals angry sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of, like, you know, and so how you say things matters.
Right.
I'm like, look, there's a way to say that is standing for yourself and not against anybody else. And you can say, you know, I've been reporting that discomfort or that pain for, you know, the last 8 visits. And and now there's a problem there. The pain, you know, I'm not feeling heard.
Yeah.
And maybe just asking straight up, is there somebody else in this practice I can see?
Yeah.
You know, and not. That does not mean we fall out with our doctor. It means there's somebody else in this group that you might have a better fit with.
Right.
You get to ask.
Right.
And they will probably be like, sure, you want to see Dr. So-and-so or Dr. So-and-so? They have an opening next week. You say thank you, keep it moving. I mean,
yeah, for sure. Wow. So we know, at least for most people, mental health is a buzzword, right? Most people shy away from that, especially in the very beginning. So when you have clients that start with you, do people often fall off quickly, or do they get to a point where they say, hey, you know, I got it. I'm okay now, you know?
There's a huge stigma, for sure. I mean, with mental health, period.
Right.
Particularly with men of certain age, right? Okay. Mid-career vision loss. Are they, you have to have something really wrong to need to see a counselor is typically the mindset,
okay.
You know? And so I think I also work with some clients who are not visually impaired. And I will say those folks fall off faster when the going gets hard than the visually impaired clients.
Wow.
But I've never thought about the question you just asked until you asked it. There's a lot of paperwork in the beginning of onboard. If you've ever been in counseling, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. There's a lot of forms that need to be filled out.
Yeah.
That's true at the front end of the vocational rehab process too. All these bureaucracies, right? And I think where the trust starts from hello with me is the way I interact with prospective clients.
Okay.
Because right away, I'm like, tell me about your vision loss. You know, are you a texter? Like, what would be the best way to communicate with you? If I send you these forms to sign electronically, can you negotiate that? Hey, if not, I'll print paper forms and I'll come out to you. Like, we have choices. And I think right away there's this comfort that happens that people recognize I'm not being made wrong. I don't have to, you know, she seems to get it. I don't need to pretend that my vision's anyway other than the way it is. And because the accommodations are not, you know, accessibility is a clinical issue, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They don't put me out one bit, right? I do all my own. When you call, you get me. Like, you don't get some layer of somebody who may or may not know enough about vision loss to be helpful. And that's maybe why people don't fall off early on. If they you know, if they fall off, it's usually mid-game when they've got some tools and they're feeling better.
Okay.
And that's the point of counseling, is to not need counseling. Okay. So that's a good sign.
Yeah. Do any of them end up coming back?
Yeah, people circle back when life is lifing.
Yeah, for sure.
And the good news is you're not wrong for having been, you know, gone for a while. It's like, hey, so happy to hear from you again. And how can I support you? What's going on now? It'll usually be some family, you know, something's changed in the family dynamic. Something's changed in the employment dynamic. Just life, you know, has gotten harder.
Yeah.
Or in the case of folks with progressive vision loss, another plateau, right? There's been another layer, you know, round of diminishing vision.
Yeah.
And they had really mastered, right, the, you know, technologies and living with the low vision. And now we're going from low vision to no vision. Or it feels, you know, there's been, right, some more decline in vision. And that's, and the anxiety and the fear, you know, are real all over again. And the adjusting, emotional stages of adjusting to vision loss repeat with each, you know, diminishment of vision. So it's much harder to be losing your vision gradually than it is to be losing it, you know, suddenly.
Yeah. What advice would you give anyone who is, you know, contemplating seeking therapy after diagnosis, but, you know, maybe feel like it's not a great idea? Or
I tend to not give advice. I throw out some recommendations.
Okay.
You want somebody who gets blindness, right? And that's, and I'm the first one to say, there's not a lot of folks out there that fit that bill. So, you know, the single question I get asked the most often is, I'm outside of where you work. How do I find somebody who does what you do? And so I'm in South Carolina, I'm in Texas, I'm in California. And I suggest, right, you know, the big national clearinghouse website, Psychology Today, where pretty much any therapist, you know, you can search by zip code, you can search by your state. Most people don't understand state licensed mental health providers, right? I'm licensed in Georgia and Colorado. Okay. If you live in South Carolina, you will not be my client. That would, right, not be legal for me to counsel people in states where I'm unlicensed. So people who've heard about what I do often are just like, you know, I need somebody who does, I'm adjusting to my vision loss. Like, I need help with this. And so you can go on Psychology Today. You can search for your state, your geographic area, and you can filter for different terms. And Blind Ally is a filter you can choose. Do a Google search for therapists in Alabama who are blind allied in Psychology Today. You know, you will get, it'll choke out a list of whatever people that meet those criteria who are self-identifying as that. I still think asking a couple really pointed questions yourself when you call as a prospective client is the right way to go, because do they have specialized training in blindness? Are they visually impaired themselves? You know, what do they understand any of the big bureaucratic systems people are trying to navigate?
Yeah.
They may not. And quite honestly, even really well-qualified mental health professionals, if they don't know how to accommodate the vision loss, you're going to need to teach them.
Yeah.
And that's going to be because you, right up front, straight out ask, right? I can't deal with these online forms. How else can you help me fill them out?
Yeah.
If transportation, right, if you're a non-driver, tell them that right out. Because the way they schedule with you will be very different. But this is like asking for what you need is highly correlated to the likelihood you will receive it. So empowering people how to shop for a counselor ends up being an unpaid piece of work I do frequently. But I think prepped with a couple good questions and the how to do the Google search, a lot of people tend to find somebody who's a fit. And increasingly, there are conversations in the mental health community about how Prevent Blindness nationally is working on a series of training modules to help counselors learn how to be blind friendly, how to be, you know, more responsive to a visually impaired client. That's, I don't know how far that is from being out publicly, but I love that they're doing it.
Yeah.
Because people don't know what they don't know. And a lot of counselors are going to, you know, do business the way they assume everybody's able.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, if they didn't know why, if someone didn't flag that that was an issue for them, what else are they going to assume? So being, you know, upfront about it. But for people who are in the stage where they're in denial or they're not able to self-disclose yet. I don't know. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
I don't know that those folks are going to be finding the support they need.
Yeah.
But I kind of believe everything happens right on time. So it, you know, when, right, when the teacher's, student's ready, the teacher appears type thing. Hopefully people get connected to some other folks who are visually impaired. At a minimum, you know, just, I have a friend who says the number one need of blind people is other blind people. And so peer support tends to be what a lot of the mental health, and that's, you know, it is not professional mental health, yeah, but people who understand and get it and are glad you came and are willing to talk about stuff that you find, right, pertains to your life and your disability, is, it's a low incidence disability, is worth its weight in gold as a, yeah, as a starting point.
Yeah. Wow. Outside of your practice, what, if any, community work do you do with the blind and low vision community or outside of that?
Honestly, I don't have time for it. I mean, I am a member of the Cobb NFB chapter,
yeah,
but I don't consider that community work. That's, you know, right? I would have been a member of, you know, organization somewhere. The Cobb chapter is awesome. So a little bit of a, you know, shout out to them. But it is not, my guess is that there will be more opportunities as the wider blind rehab community starts to really focus on the unmet mental health needs of their clients. Mm-hmm. I may end up, you know, helping try to create conversations between, get people out of their silos.
Yeah.
Right. Help create conversations between state licensed mental health providers who don't know blindness.
Yeah.
And help them understand, here's this population with this unmet need. Here are some of the right ways to be culturally competent working with them, so that it's not a traumatic experience for the person with vision loss to see a counselor who doesn't know blindness.
Yeah.
Because that is a risk.
Yeah.
And I've heard some horror stories, you know, so that turns people up. They're already, right, scared. Mental health's already, right? You want to reduce stigma, not discourage people from accessing care. And then if somebody goes in and has an experience where they've made a courageous request for some accommodation they need and they get, you know, told no.
Yeah.
Like, ouch. I mean, that just, yeah, it hurts my heart to even hear the stories. But I think also, right, so what are your other choices is still the right conversation. Yeah. You know, what did you learn from that experience? Well, she didn't get it. I'm like, great. Who else? Where else can we shop? All we learned is that one person didn't get it. That doesn't mean you don't deserve help.
That's just one person.
As one person who doesn't get it.
Well, right.
You know what? It happens. Yeah. Like, keep it moving. And so being able to, I think, kind of normalize that, there's always going to be, right, one neighbor who says, get off my yard. There's always going to be, you know, one counselor who might not get it. On the other hand, I'm so aware that this has not been a conversation in the broader, like, my mental health degree is specifically in disability rehab.
Yeah.
I am not most mental health counselors. And
right.
I know that, right?
Right.
I have a degree of a whole different flavor. Literally, clinical rehabilitation counseling is about psychosocial adjustment to disability.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, a lot of people give me the, huh, what does that mean? Psychosocial acknowledges that part of the problem of dealing with your acquired disability is the attitudes of everybody else, right? It's not, so garden variety mental health is much more about, like, we're going to help, you know, the world is the way it is. We're going to help you learn, you know, right, to take care, self-care, self-compassion, all the tools that we use. But when you're working with somebody who's literally a lot of their anxiety and trauma is around, I have to go deal with Social Security again. I got shot down the last three times I went. I know I qualify. Everybody, my doctors say I qualify. What am I doing wrong? And, you know, and I've, right, I'm the first person to say, you're not doing anything wrong. This is a great big bureaucracy. And, you know, let's not take it personally,
yeah,
right? Bad news is, I think this is just how they do business. So, right, let's, you know, tool you up, right? You know, pray you up, whatever courage looks like for you, get you feeling confident,
mm-hmm,
to go back into that arena and ask again for what you know you need, because, right, this is the work. If we stop, you know, persistence takes an enormous amount of energy and is exhausting if you can't, right?
Yeah.
the sighted world doesn't get you. And I think working with a counselor who can say that sentence, you know, and name some things that you may have thought but you didn't have words for, is just, you know, people deserve to have somebody in their corner who's not only gets the mental health and the trauma side and gets how do we accommodate you and your vision loss, but gets your literally feel like you're stuck on a hamster wheel with three or four different government agencies, yeah, depending on the day, right? You're trying to get a Social Security to listen to you. You try to get vocational rehab to listen to you. You just got a pile of letters that say your, you know, Medicaid was cut and you don't know why and you can't read them and you don't have anybody home to read them to you.
Right.
Right. And it feels overwhelming because it is.
So where do you think the missing piece or pieces are within these community resources, state agencies, and, you know, specifically for visually impaired individuals, but just people with disabilities trying to navigate, mm-hmm, all of these services? I mean, what is the missing link?
If there were just one, it would be beautiful. Blind community support doesn't exist in a lot of parts of Georgia. And when I say blind community support, I do not necessarily mean people with degrees and specialties. I mean a sighted assistant to get you to the appointment. You know, if you're lucky enough to get Social Security to sit on the phone for an hour and a half and get an appointment to be seen in person, how are you going to get there? Right? You know, just somebody to be my driver, right? And some basic, so building community awareness, raising the profile of the issue, reaching out, like I've cold called Lions clubs just to say, you know, hey, there's this need in the community. Would you be willing? And I think, A, they didn't realize. B, I think there's a lot, you know, nobody's building a core of volunteers in the community that just like have some basic soft skills and, you know, blindness etiquette training to figure out,
right,
you know, so you probably have some great food pantries in your area, but they probably have no idea what to do with you if you show up blind or visually impaired, you know? So I think that may be the piece that is, you know, the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Just concerned citizens with some time on their hands who are willing to, you know, be a driver once a month and get somebody to an appointment could be game changing for a lot of people who are non-drivers and don't have anybody else to ask. But yeah, I think that's a drop in the bucket. As you know, there's like, this conversation could go on all day, so we'll stop there.
So as you know, this podcast is called Eyes and Lows. I'd like for you to share some of your highs and lows, you know, of the year and, you know, in the work that you do as well.
Let's see. Well, I guess the high probably would be founding a nonprofit, Task Force Empowering Blind Independence, is getting off the ground. It's barely on training wheels at this point, but is very much a group of vision rehab professionals, folks with vision loss, and myself have kind of been meeting off and on since December of last year and talking about what's not, you know, how access could look in Georgia to a lot of blindness independent skills. And something as simple as creating just, you know, a HIPAA compliant free website where somebody could do a pretty basic Google search and find somebody to teach them white cane skills in their area, right? Doesn't exist in Georgia right now. So that's exciting. That'll be the first project that the task force takes on. I guess the low probably has been, you know, being on the journey with some specific clients during experiences that were heartbreaking and just knowing it doesn't have to be like this. And also recognizing this is, you know, all we can do with that pain is mobilize for change. And, right, this is not, counseling is not advocacy. It is not. You know, as much as you can empower people to be self-advocates, we need a lot of much bigger changes at the macro level,
right,
that we will not be doing in, you know, in the work line of work I'm in right now. But I think talking about best practices in other states, you know, so that people aren't discouraged.
Yeah.
And people recognize it, how, you know, this could look other ways. people in other states like do job readiness for people who are blind differently than we do in Georgia. What would that be like? How could we not reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
And so I've done some field trips to other states to, you know, sit at the feet of people who do some really innovative stuff. And I'm hopeful bringing some of that back.
Yeah.
And implementing it and connecting clients with resources in other states, things like writers, you know, book clubs, right? Things in other states that Lighthouses for the Blind offer that don't exist here.
Mm-hmm.
Just being an ambassador myself, calling up, hi, this is Janice from Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, I work with people who are losing their vision. Do you have, you know, would you be willing to get on a Zoom call? Talk to me about what y'all do. And by the end of those calls, people have been so generous. That's probably the high. People have been so generous with their time. And in the end, they're like, I said, you know, could I refer a Georgia person to your group in this book study or this writer's workshop for people who are blind? And I mean, the answer is always yes. Like, it's just, how do I, you know, how do we get that information in the hands of somebody that can use it?
Yeah.
And I happen to have a decent platform for that right now.
So
I spend a lot of time saying, you know, I don't know if you're aware, there's this book club. And if that would interest you, I'm happy to share, you know, what an email and a phone number. And then people, there's some agency there. Like, people feel like, oh, here's one thing I can do that I can get some traction with.
Right.
It is not going to get me a job and pay the bills. But you know what? It's positive. It's mentally stimulating if you're depressed, right? You know, a book club on a topic that resonates with you, that speaks to your adjustment to vision loss or just helps you learn, you know, self-compassion it's a pretty big gift.
Yeah. And even just having a group of people that you could, you know, do that with.
And once a week I can, or once a month, however often they meet, you know, and they are working with you on the accommodations to access the book. Like, they understand this isn't the average book club crowd.
Right.
Right. We're going to need to, we don't know if you're low vision, or we don't know if you're reading Braille. We don't know if you have, you know, if you're signed up for the talking audiobook stuff yet. And if not, we can help you like figure that out. And I do a lot of paperwork for people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
To help, hey, you've never signed up for this? Let me fill out a form. I didn't know that existed. Yeah, sure.
Wow.
It's a thing. And you don't need to make an appointment with your doctor to get, I've got some letters behind my name. Let me fill out this form with you and get it sent off quick. So it's moving. It's not just another thing that's like, you feel like you're waiting for everything and it's frustrating. Yeah. Another frustrating thing.
Yeah. Well, first, congratulations on the nonprofit. And, you know, I know you said you weren't doing much community work, but it sounds like you're definitely doing a lot of community work for sure in this community. So, yes, congratulations on that. But with everything that you do, how do you find time for self-care?
My self-care. Actually, I've been, you know, on the mat doing yoga for probably 25 years. Meditation's a big part of that. But I will say this year, 2024, it was hard to get any of that stuff in. A group of us started traveling to Augusta once a month to work with some clients there and bring orientation, mobility training, and vision rehab therapy and counseling, which has been particularly challenging since Hurricane Helene. And yeah, so my meditation practice was in the ditch personally, and it showed. And so I just started getting up an hour earlier in the morning. So I'm on day 15, right, as we speak right now.
Okay.
Doing some meditation and some affirmations and some visualization. And before the sun has even come up, and journaling, you know, that's where the clarity comes. And I think instead of just, you know, banging your head against the wall, yet another thing that seems to be broken, that's when your bright ideas appear. It happens. And so it's been a good 15 days. I'm going to see if I can keep this up.
Yeah.
I'll let you know.
Yes, please do. So those who are interested in helping the blind and low vision community, even those who are in mental health or those who are in, you know, community organizations and they want to do more, where do you think they can start?
I'm happy to be a personal Sherpa guide in networking, Matt. I do a lot of matchmaking.
Yeah.
Kind of is the way that tends to go because there is not a single welcoming front door on blindness and low vision issues in Georgia. We've got a lot of consumer groups, but a lot of people aren't joiners. They're not looking to be a part of a group. The eye care specialists that diagnosed you rarely have any idea how to connect you to the blind, you know, rehab world. to learn independent skills to be successful with less vision. And so, you know, and if you don't know the jargon, you know, you're not going to be out looking for your own, you know, comms, right? Certified orientation mobility specialist is not rolling off the tongues of somebody who's
right.
it's a lot of jargon. And so I often just say, yeah, shoot me an email. Let's talk about it. And as I start to figure out what people's interests and capacity are, I kind of hear somebody would be good to talk to who might be able to use you, you know, or depending geographically what part of the state they're in. Okay. I can say, here's some doers in your area. Let's make sure everybody gives permission to have their name shared, obviously. But we've started something every other month now. I call it the Roundtable for Blind Counselors and Advocates. And it's actually the one organized place that I invite people to come who ask that question. There's people from all over the state showing up, people, you know, attorneys who work in disability advocacy, other people who do what I do in different parts of the state, parents who are, you know, Braille transcribers who've been strong advocates for their own kids coming up through K-12 with vision loss, a lot of the professionals that work in this field and have for decades. And so very often those folks, you know, are having different experiences, bringing up something, a need or a cool idea, something that they recently found out about. And, you know, so that information sharing tends to galvanize little projects that spin off, interestingly enough. And a lot of this is just people don't know, you know, you need to network. It requires a lot of networking, and that's, Facebook isn't all that accessible. Depending on where you are with your vision loss journey, I'm not much of a Facebooker myself. Although I tried, I've got a page up the last year, but it's, and then I started a newsletter to try to give people something they can just forward.
Okay.
Right. Which is just a way to, you know, recognize mental health for people with vision loss is a thing. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about it. We don't need to be scared of this. And then I just try to hit topics that either things that I know need to be talked about or things that I'm aware that people constantly are, you know, confused by.
Yeah.
Break down how these government programs work and how would you get them to help you. And so, yeah, that'll give you something to forward around if you know somebody. And it's interesting how often a fourth hand person who got the email newsletter reaches out to me.
Right.
It's like somebody who knew somebody forwarded me your newsletter. Okay. Who, you know, tell me about you. What are your interests and needs? Sometimes it's people volunteering help, but right now, more often than not, it's people with vision loss who are feeling isolated somewhere where they're like, you know, I can't, right?
Right.
Can't find the things I need, mm-hmm. you know, and they're not even sure how to frame their question for help or which door to knock on to ask. And so that's, yeah.
Okay. Well, if anyone would like to learn more information or get in contact with you, how can they reach you?
My email is probably the best way. The email address is Janice, Janice, at adjustingtovisionloss.com. Adjusting is all spelled out. T is T-O, visionloss.com. And yeah, happy to hear from folks and be a resource.
Awesome. And so with our listeners and families of our listeners as well, is there anything that you would like to give them a word of encouragement when it comes to their mental health and seeking help for their mental health?
I think the main thing is to say you deserve support. And right, if the things you tried haven't worked, don't stop.
Well, thank you, Janice. We are so happy that you were able to come and speak to us today and give us information about the work that you do. We are so grateful to have people like you in this line of work. It's never enough, it seems like, but you are doing tremendous work. We are so grateful for you. So thank you for being a guest on our show today.
Thank you for taking the issue on.